Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today we're going to be talking about The Equalizer, The Box Trolls, The Skeleton Twins, which is not a horror movie, by the way. I know some people have asked that. And Love is Strange. There's also going to be news in the trailer park, box office prediction, the world-famous DVD roundup. I'm going to be talking a little bit about one of my most exciting times of the year, one of my favorite times of the year, Halloween time, which is all of October. I co-opt the entire month of October to be Halloween-themed, and that starts next week. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about what horror movie plans I have for the month of Halloween. Before we get to all that, though, you can get a hold of me by emailing me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, go to twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Rolling into the movie news, there's actually quite a bit of movie news. I'm kind of rushing into this because there's some important things I want to talk about. Well, important. I mean, this isn't ISIS important. This is an entertainment show. We don't talk about politics or news or things that really affect your life. We talk about the stuff that affect your leisure time. And in some ways, that's the most important thing because it's what you do with yourself and your family and your friends that really brings your humanity to bear, because it's not what you have to do, it's what you choose to do. And that's why entertainment's important. Entertainment is the kind of thing that occupies the time that human beings with the big brains, the animals with the big brains, these are the kind of things that we do to make sure those big brains, some bigger than others and some smaller than others, do not get bored. The first piece actually dropped last week. I didn't talk about it because it was kind of still developing and I wanted to make sure it got all played out. There is definitely going to be a Deadpool movie. Now, for those who don't know who Deadpool is, he had a brief, truncated and mutated, no pun intended, installment in X-Men Origins Wolverine. Ryan Reynolds' character was what would be Deadpool, but very different than what Deadpool is in the comic books and the cartoons, which are usually pretty accurate. Fans have been calling for a Deadpool movie for years. They've been wanting a Deadpool movie. Deadpool is a very popular niche character in the Marvel Universe spinoff of X-Men. Well, they're going to do one. And the first thing people asked, is it going to be rated R? Because Deadpool is not a guy who likes to censor himself. It is often violent, and he often uses colorful language. Here's the thing. It's going to be PG-13. If you honestly think that they're going to make a Deadpool movie and make it R-rated, then you are absolutely stupid. It's just not going to happen. Most superhero movies are PG-13 or less, with rare exceptions like The Watchmen. But for the big, you need the PG-13 rating to get the audience. And the only time R really, really matters is when it's like a horror movie, like a slasher movie. A slasher movie that's PG-13 is considered a neutered slasher movie. So you got to have R for a horror movie, for a lot of horror movies and slasher movies. You got to have R for a raunchy comedy, for it to really work. You got to have R for like something like The Expendables, which is going on nostalgia, and everybody it's going for are people who are over 17 anyways. But a Deadpool movie is going to be a superhero movie. Needs to be PG-13, and it's not going to do well. And here's why. I mean, unless they change the character. Because the character's a niche character in the comics. Popular, wildly popular in the comics. But he's not like an A-list Marvel character. And it's Fox doing it, and Fox stumbles around with their properties a little bit too much. Look at what happened with X-Men Origins Wolverine. That's what you're going to get. You're going to get an X-Men Origins Wolverine version of a Deadpool movie. And if it's a great Deadpool movie, it's going to be something like Dread, which really pleases the fans and doesn't even make like $10 million in the theaters. This is a fool's errand at this point. I mean, I'm interested in seeing it, but I really don't think it's going to be something that's going to knock the socks off of anybody. It's going to either be great for the fans and not do very well for the mainstream audience, or it's going to be made for the mainstream audience and do well, and then people are going to hate it in retrospect. Next piece of news, Aquaman apparently had a cameo in Man of Steel, although you didn't see him, and it was just added by Zack Snyder saying, oh yeah, you remember when like Superman was like in the water and you heard of whales? Well, supposedly Aquaman had come and saved him, which I'm calling shenanigans on because I don't think that actually happened. I think that that is him trying to retcon it for Superman versus Batman Dawn of Justice. So people are saying, well, you introduced Aquaman in that movie. You're introducing too many. Like, oh, no, no, no. I introduced Aquaman in Man of Steel. BS. No way. Just make the doggone movies and quit retrofitting them a couple years later. I mean, it's one thing to retcon Star Wars. It's 20, 30 years old. But to retcon this stuff is nonsense. All right. Another piece of news, which I actually am looking forward to. The Fargo showrunner Noah Hawley is writing a shared universe Universal Monsters reboot. Now, I'm all for this, but just do a Frankenstein movie. That's what I want him to do. Do a reboot of Frankenstein, do a reboot of Dracula, do a reboot of the Wolfman, and then give them a shared movie. Then do Frankenstein meets the Wolfman. Then do House of Dracula or something like that where you can bring them all together. Part of the fun of these movies is to see the characters from other movies come together. To do a reboot of House of Frankenstein or House of Dracula, okay, yeah, that's a nice little spinoff, but that's kind of what Van Helsing was. I mean, Van Helsing, some people will say it's one of the worst ones out there, but it's got to have something to start with before you just start throwing monsters in. Unless you're doing something like the Monster Squad, where the whole bit is to bring them all in. Next piece of news, which hit this week, is Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves are definitely coming back for Bill and Ted's 3. Now, the most ludicrous headline I saw was it said they're going to come back as 40-year-old men, forgetting the fact that they're both about 50 years old. Keanu's honest to God 50. Alex Winter is 49. And they're going to be playing 40-year-old men. This is typical of Hollywood. They always cast people 10 years older than they really are. And it goes all the way back to teenagers when they have a movie that takes place in a high school. They want to have adults. They want to have you over 18 because then it's a lot easier to do the production. You don't have to have a set teacher and you don't have to deal with child labor laws. You can deal with them as adults. And as it goes on, you get people playing 5 to 10 years younger than they are. And it gets a little silly. And yeah, there's plastic surgery. And Keanu Reeves doesn't look like your average 50-year-old man, but he's 50. Why don't you just have him play a 50-year-old man? Couple things I want to hit on real quick, just kind of rattle through them. William Shatner is apparently going to appear in Star Trek 3 alongside Leonard Nimoy. And that's great as long as there's no Bones, what are you doing that tribble line? Or that's exactly the only line he gets. One of the two. Either it's not going to be there or that's the only thing he says. That's what I want to see happen. I think it'd be fun. I just hope it doesn't get too cute. Ridley Scott now is saying he's not going to be adding the Xenomorphs into the Prometheus sequel, which is okay. I mean, I love the universe that we're building with these architects, and I was fascinated by it. That sound means that the news is over and it's time to roll into the trailer park. Two real quick movies I want to hit. The first one is a Halloween-themed movie. It's The Town That Dreaded Sundown. And it opens on October 16th in limited release and probably on demand.
He was the boogeyman, they said. Can't catch the boogeyman. And now, he's back.
The town of Texarkana has awoken to a gruesome act of violence.
He could have killed me. He didn't.
He chose that girl to be his messenger.
You couldn't catch me 66 years ago, and they never will.
I never saw the original, although I'm now intrigued to see the original, because it's a classic sort of scarecrow video kind of movie, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm all for horror remakes as long as they're authentically good remakes. The next one is John Wick, opens on October 24th.
You got out once. You dip so much as a pinky back into this pond, you may find something reaching out to pull you back in.
It's personal.
Where'd you get that car?
What does it matter?
It's not what you did, son. It's who you did it to.
People keep asking if I'm back.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
Here we are, Keanu Reeves again. This is an action movie. I don't know how well it's going to do. I get a real sort of autumn action movie, shoot 'em up kind of movie that is going to crash and burn with the mainstream audience. At least he's probably, maybe, is he playing a 50-year-old? I don't know. This one did extremely well at Fantastic Fest, but that doesn't mean anything because Fantastic Fest is such a fanboy marketplace. You never get a good read on whether it's going to open well outside of that very specific fanboy. But it might have some good action in it. All right, that's it. I need to go to a break. When I come back, we're going to be talking about The Equalizer and Love is Strange.
Shake that.
Kevin Carr with Fat Guys in the Movies coming back from the break. We are going to be talking about the movies this week, some of them that are opening wide. One in this segment's opened wide. The other one's kind of in limited release, squeaking out through the rest of the country. It's been out for a couple weeks. The first one, though, I want to talk about is The Equalizer. A man with a mysterious past takes justice into his own hands when he sees innocent people hurt, leading to a showdown with the Russian mafia.
I promised I would never go back to being that person. But when somebody does something unspeakable to someone you hardly knew, you do something about it, because you can.
You didn't take out five pimps. You took out the East Coast hub of the Russian mafia. He won't stop until he kills you and anyone you care about.
Had enough? Because I can keep going. Brick by brick, body by body. What do you see when you look at me? What do you see when you look at me?
This is actually an update of the old TV show with Edward Woodward from the 80s. And it's funny because my mom never let me watch this show. It reminds me a lot of the Death Wish movies, which of course starred Charles Bronson, another set of films my mom wouldn't let me watch when I was, and probably rightfully so. Those movies can be pretty violent. They have rape and murder in them all over the place. It wasn't until I was much older, at least into my 20s, maybe into my 30s, before I actually saw the Death Wish movies. And I've seen all of them. They came out on Blu-ray. They had a Blu-ray release, oh gosh, 3 or 4 years ago. And I got most of them. For some reason, I got like 2, 3, and 4 to review. Like one, they didn't re-release because the studio didn't have the rights to it. And 5, they didn't release because it's just, quite frankly, terrible. And The Equalizer is this in the sense that it gives you a chance to vicariously live through the characters on screen and have a cathartic response to justice that doesn't get served. You know, if you are frustrated with the criminal justice system and how it's unable to get some people who are bad guys and how it's sometimes ineffective and how sometimes our sticky little laws like innocent until proven guilty are hard to circumvent, you know, for the real bad guys. This is a great way to experience it and sort of, you know, get it out of your system. And I think for the same reason that the Death Wish movies did well, that this should do well. I think this is, well, plus it's got Denzel Washington. He definitely commands an audience. And I mean, people saw Safe House. Safe House made ridiculous amounts of money for how much it probably should have made. It wasn't a great movie, but it did extremely well. And this is another Denzel Washington sort of action film where he's kicking buttons and taking names. And Antoine Fuqua is directing it. Now, of course, he most recently directed Olympus Has Fallen, which was a lot of fun. But he also directed Denzel Washington in Training Day way back, you know, a decade or so ago, which earned Denzel an Oscar for Best Actor. It's a cathartic movie. Like I said, it's not to be taken seriously. It really is just a Pulp Fiction kind of film. But it's done exceptionally well for that type of movie. I mean, Denzel Washington does a fine job. He's very formidable as an opponent. And the bad guy, the Russian mobster, he's good in it. And it's got Chloe Grace Moretz as a troubled prostitute that sort of sets all this in motion when she gets beaten up by her pimps. I enjoyed it. It has some great action. It's got a good pace to it. So with that, I'm going to say The Equalizer kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Love is Strange. Very different from The Equalizer, although it does involve older gentlemen. Love is Strange. After falling on hard times, an older gay couple has to move in with each other's respective families to make ends meet.
We are gathered here today with the purpose of uniting in matrimony George Esteban Garea, Benjamin Arthur Hull.
Word got out to the Archdiocese.
You've all known this whole time that Ben and I have been living together.
The decision is effective immediately.
With my private lessons and Ben's pension, we need a place to stay.
When you live with people, you know them better than you care to.
The movie itself, it's sort of one of those acting showpieces for Alfred Molina and John Lithgow. And of course, it's socially relevant because they're a gay couple. One thing I do think is good about the movie is it doesn't get overly preachy about them being a gay couple. The thing that starts this in motion is they're a gay couple who've lived together for years and then they get married. So when they get married, one of the characters, Alfred Molina, he teaches music at a Catholic school, and his boss comes in and says, "Look, you've you made a big deal by posting your photos and everything, that you kind of violated the rules of conduct of the Catholic school. And because you're in a gay marriage, you're going to be let go. And that's a real thing that's happened. In fact, it happened literally down the road from me at a high school down the road, where a woman, she was a lesbian, but she was fired from her job because she was a lesbian, because she was in a lesbian relationship. And I'm not even going to get into the political discussion of that. Suffice to say, this is real things happening today. And it's unfair. And look, you know, you can come down on that side of that issue however you want to. But I personally, I think that's one of the dumbest reasons to fire somebody. And in a way, not very Christian way to handle things. So I'm just going on the record for that. Here's the thing with the movie. Even though this happens, it happens and they get past it. The movie's not about that. And it'd be okay if it was. If it was about, you know, the ramifications of gay marriage and what it means to work in a Catholic school, that'd be fine. But that's not what the movie's about. They don't dwell on it and they don't preach about it. And I actually kind of respected that, because they said, let's get to the story. Because the story is, there's these two old men who've lived most of their lives, and now they have to give up their apartment and they have to go move in with their families, each separately. And what a just disaster it is for them, because it's impossible to live with your family. And when you're in your 60s, it's even more impossible to live with your family. So I think it has an interesting look at how tough that can be. The biggest problem with this movie is the families are horrible people, and they're annoying, and they're people I wouldn't want to live with, and nobody says what they mean, and it's watching the family dysfunction bothers me, just because it's annoying. And it's not funny the way, say, like, This Is Where I Leave You from last week was. So ultimately, I'm going to have to say, the movie kind of sucks, because while it has fantastic performances, it just kind of rambles around and flops around and doesn't really have a point.
It kind of sucks.
Okay. Here's the real quick discussion about the news story that this thing sparked a couple weeks ago. When it came out, it's got an R rating. And people wigged out because they said, oh, it's got an R rating because of the gay couple, because it has gay sex in it, which it doesn't. It doesn't. This is not Brokeback Mountain, where there's like a sex scene. You have an old couple and they hug and they kiss once or twice. And there's one scene where they snuggle in bed together. I'm fully clothed. But people were freaking out saying that's why it got an R rating. And it didn't. If you actually look at the rating, it's an R rating for language. They drop a couple F-bombs throughout the movie. Now, you can sit there and argue that a couple F-bombs does not warrant an R rating. And they don't use it really overly crassly. It's just thrown in as swearing. But it's everybody knows. Anybody knows anything about the MPAA. If you drop a couple F-bombs, you get like one. And it can't be used in the context of sex. But if you drop a couple F-bombs throughout the film, you're going to get an R rating. That's just the way the MPA works. This is nothing surprising. And it always bothers me when people make a stink about something that's not genuine. And this was not a genuine reason to get outraged. It doesn't even say it's rated R for gay sex. It says it's rated R for language. And that's it. It's the people who got outraged because it got an R rating who complained about it. I'm fine if you want to be outraged, but if you're going to be outraged about something for real. Don't make up stuff to be outraged about, because when you make up stuff to be outraged about, you do a disservice to everything you get outraged about, because then nobody takes you seriously and you're ultimately crying wolf. All right, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Box Trolls and the Skeleton Twins. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We're going to be talking about a couple more movies. The Box Trolls is going to be talking about in this segment. I'm also going to be talking about the Skeleton Twins. Like I said, that's not a horror movie. It's an unfortunately named movie. It's a great name for the movie. I mean, if you actually know the film and you see it, it makes sense. But it does kind of feel like it's going to be a horror movie, which might not do well for it in release, because people will see, if they don't want to see a horror movie, they're not going to see it. And if they want to see a horror movie, they'll go see it, and then they'll be, this isn't a horror movie, and then they'll go tell their friends it sucks. Anyways, we'll talk about the Skeleton Twins in a minute. First, I want to talk about the Box Trolls. A village wants to eradicate a group of trolls that live under their streets when they fear the creatures are stealing children.
I will destroy every last box troll in this town.
I want every box troll gone.
Let's go. Who are you, boy?
I'm a box troll.
Then let's see you fit in your box. Mm-hmm.
Please help us.
You need to look like a proper boy.
Box troll, come out, come out.
No more hiding, right?
Right.
If you already know me, you know I love animation. Not every animated film's great. I mean, there's some stinkers out there, but I love animation. I think animation is, you see some incredibly innovative stuff happening in animation, especially today, with the tools that are available. But the thing with animation is everything CGI, and I love CGI. I love Pixar. I love the most of the DreamWorks movies. I think you can do some beautiful things with computers. A lost art, or an art form that's dissipating, is stop motion animation. And I love stop motion animation. For those who don't know the difference, stop motion is where you actually have models that you move frame by frame. Nightmare Before Christmas was probably the most famous recent, and I say recent because it's like 20 some years old, but the most recent stop motion animated film that most people will recognize and know. Other things like Frankenweenie, which came out, what, 2 years ago? That one was stop motion animation. Tim Burton does a lot with stop motion animation, obviously. Those two are Tim Burton movies. Leica, which is a company that was formed or reformed a decade or so ago, they did Coraline and Paranorman. Both those movies, I'm going to tell you right now, made my top 10 lists of each of those years. I loved both films. And I've recently rewatched Coraline, and it is such a brilliant movie. Top to bottom. I mean, in and out. It's gorgeous. It's got a great story. It's expertly delivered. Paranorman, same thing. So cool. It's so innovative and so sweet and heartwarming, yet it has an edge to it. So I was really looking forward to the Box Trolls, and it didn't disappoint. The Box Trolls is stop motion animation, but it has that unique look. Yes, it looks a little creepy at times, but it just sort of, you get some grotesque characters, some villains who are, you know, kind of crazy looking and bizarre, especially in the sort of that claymation looking style, even though it's not claymation. No pun intended, or maybe it's completely intended. It's a real out of the box film. And I've been doing movie reviews for a dozen years, so I see a lot of movies, and it can get wearing on you seeing the same thing over and over and over again. And while this travels a similar road with a fairy tale type of story, takes place in sort of this olden town, and there's rich people and poor people. You have that, those general juxtaposition, and it has the people who live under the streets, which are the trolls, and they're very cute. And they're adorable, but weird. And the story's about this boy who's raised by them, who thinks he's a box troll himself. And he's not. He's a boy. And when he finally goes up to the world on the surface, he has to deal with bridging the gap between his heritage, which is his humanity, and the trolls. And sort of try and make peace there and uncover the bad things that are happening and the lies that are being told. And it is so visually stimulating and so amazingly done. And it's got such a warm heart and such a neat focus. And even the point, like the town they live in is Cheeseburg or something like that. It's a Cheeseville, or they love cheese, which is such a bizarre Wallace and Gromit kind of angle. But all the people, the designs of the people, they look like cheese. They look, you know, they have the color sort of through their skin, sort of like blue cheese, where you've got, you know, this sort of darker color throughout. The design is really thought through. And the characters are fantastic. The animation is beautiful. I wouldn't take a 3-year-old because they're going to get bored, because it's not Winnie the Pooh and it's not like a 60-minute movie. Grade school kids. These are the kids that are youngest. And there might be some scenes. Sure, some people have said that there might be some scenes that are scary. And that's possible. But I give the kids more credit. You know, if your kids can handle Toy Story with Sid at Sid's house, you're going to be able to handle the Box Trolls. This is the kind of film it is. The story is complex enough that adults are going to get it and enjoy it and not be bored. But it's not so intricate and complex on the surface that little kids aren't going to like it either. It's just a brilliant movie. Another win for Leica. I hope people see it. I hope it makes some money, because I want to see Laika do more stuff. Stop motion animation is a lost art, and they've got their hands clutching it, trying to keep it alive. And it's a beautiful thing. So The Box Trolls totally rocks. One of my favorite movies of the year.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is The Skeleton Twins. A brother and sister who haven't spoken in 10 years reunite in order to take care of each other as depression threatens their lives.
You're my brother. We're supposed to be there for each other.
I'm tired of you acting like you're the healthy one and I'm your special needs kid.
I get depressed about my life.
So you're not a famous actor? I got news for you. No one's a famous actor.
George Clooney is a famous actor.
Okay, George Clooney, I guess that's one exception.
How'd we go 10 years without talking?
Well, it's probably not worth talking about now. You have to tell me a secret.
I slept with my scuba instructor.
Wouldn't it be easier just to tell Lance you're not ready to have a kid?
What am I going to do?
This movie made a splash at Sundance, and I remember hearing about it for months before it came out. And it's been out already. It's in limited release, but I finally got a chance to see it, and it's expanding to flyover country, which is where I live. This one stars Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader. And what's interesting about Kristen Wiig is she has been desperately trying to find something to follow up Bridesmaids with. Bridesmaids was a huge hit. It was a breakout role for her, and she hasn't really found something that has clicked since. She's done a bunch of movies and nobody's heard of them. This one, she has a chance to. The biggest problem that she faces, because she does a fine job in this movie, but the biggest problem she faces is Bill Hader just steals the show. Bill Hader puts so much pathos and emotion and struggle, and there's so much stuff going on behind the scenes because both characters are depressed. And what kind of sets this in motion is his character tries to kill himself. And she's called out to L.A. to get him because they say you can't leave him alone. So she takes him back to the East Coast to live with him, to live with her and her husband, played by Luke Wilson. Luke Wilson does a fine job in it, but Luke Wilson is kind of playing the same role he played, what, like 10 years ago when he was in a lot of movies, where he's just sort of like the attractive but boring boyfriend. He's sort of revisiting that role, and that's fine. It works for Luke Wilson. He does fine in the movie. It's kind of nice to see him again because he disappeared for a while. This film has a personal connection to me simply because I have a sister, and while even though we're not twins, we're 2 years apart, we had a very, very, very close relationship when we were kids, and extremely close. And then when we got to be adults and we kind of grew apart a little bit, we went our separate ways. I've got a family with kids, and we live in the same town. We see each other, you know, over holidays and stuff. But she's married, and her husband and her are doing their thing, and I'm married, and I got my kids, and we're doing our thing. And we still respect. There's a mutual respect, and the sort of that best friend aspect we had when we were little kids was lost. And so there is a certain, you know, there's a certain melancholy there. And although that's just the way the world works, that happens. And in this movie, you have the same sort of thing. So I can completely relate to these characters. I don't relate to sort of like the suicidal tendencies, but that's just sort of what makes the movie interesting. It's a fantastic performances, a well-done plot, and it handles certain sensitive subject matter extremely well. And what it also does is it has some very funny moments, but those funny moments don't steal from the drama of the film. They accentuate it because the reality is the world is a funny place. People make jokes and are funny all the time. Not everything has to be dour and sad and depressing. This is very real. There's a lot of truth in this. So The Skeleton Twins kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, I need to go to a break. When we come back, I'm going to be wrapping up with box office, some October movie talk, and the DVD roundup. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the final segment here. We still got a bunch of things to cover. First of all, let's talk about the box office. I said last week that The Maze Runner was going to make $20 million. It actually didn't. It did pretty well. It played exactly what people were predicting. It made $32.5 million, which was pretty much, people were saying 30-ish was what they were saying. I was edging down a little bit because box office has been kind of poor for a lot of expected releases this year. But and that makes it a hit. That's great because The Maze Runner is now the latest in what they hope will be a long line of movies. Now it had a budget of 30 some million, so it's with the foreign gross, which is like 60 some million at this point, it's broken even and it's going to make money. And so they said, yeah, green light the sequel. And that's great. That's fine. I'm not trying to take that away from anybody that they're doing a sequel to The Maze Runner. And it did very well, but it did not do Hunger Games numbers. Not that I think they were expecting it to, because The Maze Runner isn't as well known of a book. That's for sure. And it doesn't have the female protagonist, which is kind of essential for these huge things. Ultimately, it's playing like Percy Jackson, whereas Percy Jackson was hoping to replace the Harry Potter franchise, and it didn't even come close to Harry Potter. It did well, and well enough to warrant a sequel, and then the sequel kind of fizzled. I mean, this isn't playing like Hunger Games. It's not even playing like Divergent. Divergent did well. It made, what, $100 and some million, $150 million over the entire run, whereas the Hunger Games made that its first weekend. I mean, there's massive fish, there's big fish, and then The Maze Runner is kind of a small fish, and it's doing well for a small fish. If they can keep the sequels at $30 million budgets, yeah, it'll probably continue to do well. And this sequel is going to come out next year. It also depends on how good the stories are. I mean, there's a lot here. This does not mean that it's suddenly a franchise. It might be a movie, a successful movie that has a mediocre sequel and then goes nowhere. But it's better than, like, I Am Number 4 in terms of numbers and box office. Tusk bombed hard. You know, after you did The Maze Runner, you had Walking Among the Tombstones, which is $13 million. This Is Where I Leave You, which did not do well. A little bit less than that. Tusk didn't even make the top 10. Made 14th at under $900,000. It didn't even make $1 million over the weekend. Now, it's going to do well in video because all the pot-smoking Kevin Smith fans are going to wait to see it then. But it did not work anywhere outside of his demographic. Outside of his standard podcasting fans, it didn't work. And I know people who hated this movie. I didn't hate the movie. I hated what it turned into. But I know people who were like calling this the worst movie of the year. This is not really a win for Kevin Smith in any stretch. And it's sad because he could have done something really neat and innovative, and he didn't. And, you know, it just goes to show you that this guy kind of was a one-hit wonder, and he can do podcasting. And that's about it. All right, this week I think that The Equalizer is going to make $30 million. I think that's a fair bet. That's good box office in September. I don't think The Box Trolls is going to win, simply because The Box Trolls isn't as mainstream as it could be. It's not mainstream, and that's okay. It can work for a mainstream audience, but it's not playing to the lowest common denominator. And that's okay. And not everything has to be Pixar. And Pixar does both. It can be mainstream, but it can also be very innovative and different and fresh. The Box Trolls is exactly what it needs to be. And I think that's a good thing. And I just hope it makes enough money to continue to make movies that are exactly what they need to be. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on to the next segment. I'm going to be talking a little bit about horror movies because October's coming up, starting next week. And this is one of my favorite times of year because I love horror movies. And what I've done recently, I obviously have to go see horror movies all the time if they're coming out, you know, like January. And I don't avoid horror movies, but October is the time to binge watch horror movies for me. And I always look forward to stuff. Now, there's some interesting things happening in the theater starting next week with Annabelle, which sounds like such a sweet, friendly movie, but it's not. It's the prequel to The Conjuring. Looking forward to that one. I'm also looking forward to some smaller ones. Well, Ouija, I don't know if that's going to be any good. I'm holding out moderate hopes for that. But in the more independent realm, other ones that are hitting theaters this month are Dead Snow 2, Dead vs. Red, which is the sequel to Dead Snow, a Norwegian zombie Nazi horror movie, which is just a bizarre film on its own. And then The ABCs of Death 2, which we talked about a couple weeks ago. And also Horns, which isn't really a horror movie, but it's directed by Alexander Aja, who did High Tension and The Hills Have Eyes remake. Stars Daniel Radcliffe in a pretty different role. Now, on DVD, I broke down and purchased the Universal Classic Monsters 30 film collection because it's the complete 30 films. And since there's 30 movies, I'm actually considering watching one every day of October because that's my thing. I watch one horror movie a day. it's a great way to do it. I'm just going to binge watch. And some of them are terrible. I mean, like the Mummies use toilet paper. What was that, the fifth or sixth sequel? By the time they get to that and the Mummy movies, they're really kind of lame. But I'm going to watch them all. I remember back when I was in college, Sci-Fi, which was the Sci-Fi channel back then, they would do one monster week. They had Frankenstein week, Dracula week, Wolfman week, and the Mummy week. And every night they showed one of the movies. Like, I think for Frankenstein, they showed, you know, they showed Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, Son of Frankenstein, Ghost of Frankenstein. And then I forget what the last one was, or maybe they just did four. Dracula did the Dracula, Dracula's Daughter, Son of Dracula, House of Dracula. That was a lot of fun. I mean, it's just a great way to watch these classic films, and they're all very easy to watch now. And they're short. They're all like 70 minutes long. So I'm going to be watching those. I broke down and bought that. But the other thing I'm going to be doing, I'm going to do a 24-hour horror movie marathon, which I do every year, at the Drexel Theater in Columbus, Ohio, if you happen to get there. It's on October 18th and 19th. It's Shock Around the Clock. It's the sixth one they've done yearly that's 24 hours, but they've been doing in recent years, but they've been doing them since the 80s. I went to the very first one at an old theater that's no longer theater. It's like a fitness center, which is an ironic thing on its own, back in, I think, 1987 or 88. This year, they're showing the remastered Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the 40th anniversary. They're showing the original Wicker Man with Edward Woodward. They're showing The Manitou, which is such a bonkers movie with Tony Curtis and an ancient creature, god-type thing that they're calling up. It's bizarre, but it's a lot of fun. Nosferatu the Vampire, which is the Werner Herzog version of it, and The Shining. They're showing Demons, Mario Bava's, I think it's Mario Bava's Demons. Tenebrae, directed by, I'm not a huge fan, but Dario Argento. You're Next, and the original Invisible Man, so I don't have to watch that out of my classic monster set. And they're doing special screenings of The Satanists and Forgotten Film that nobody, very few people have seen and shown it on 35mm. Housebound, which is a New Zealand horror film, and The Strange Color of Your Body's Tears, which I don't even know what to think about that one. I think it's going to be weird and bonkers and strange. And that's it. So my 31 Days of Horror, I'm probably going to watch well more than 31 horror movies in October. And that sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD roundup. Speaking of horror movies, the Halloween Complete Collection came out. This is a huge deal for a lot of horror movie fans, slasher movie fans. It's the full Blu-ray set of, what, I don't know, 10 movies or something like that. And what's great about it, of course, you've got the original Michael Myers Halloween, Halloween 2, and of course you got Season of the Witch, which is a completely not involved at all in the series, but it's in there because it's a Halloween movie. And yeah, they tend to circle the drain when you finally are getting to Halloween Resurrection, which is terrible. But it's the Complete Collection. It's now available on DVD and Blu-ray. Saw the Complete Collection is out. I've heard that there's not the best transfer and not the best audio transfer if you've got like a fancy sound system. But if all you want to do is watch the Saw movies, you can get the Complete Collection there. The Exorcist, the Complete Anthology, another series that really pretty much the first movie's the best and the rest are terrible. Well, the third movie's not bad. But I mean, boy, when they get to the Rennie Harland Exorcist, the beginning, it's bad. So there's some horror movie watching, if you want to stack up on your collections. There are some other movies that are not horror movies. You've got stuff like Neighbors with Seth Rogen and Zac Efron, a funny enough movie. The Rover, which is an interesting out-of-the-box, slow-burn, post-apocalyptic thriller action movie drama-ish type thing. There's The Signal, which is a very innovative sci-fi movie that got a terrible release. I mean, Focus completely botched this release. They weren't even letting people, where I'm from, Columbus, Ohio, when it played, I didn't even know it was playing. I didn't have people asking me about it. And they didn't screen it. And I remember saying to my rep, I'm like, this is one thing I would have talked highly about, because it's a neat movie. It's a very neat movie. You've also got some bunch of TV shows, Law & Order SVU, Season 15, if you care. Royal Pain, Season 5, probably the worst season of that show, and that's a terrible show. Scandal, Season 3, if you want to catch up on Olivia Pope's Gladiators, the show premiered the fourth season just this past week. You've got Nashville, Season 3, Defiance from Sci-Fi, you've got Season 2 of that. Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Season 1, and Mom, Season 1 are also available on DVD. Finally, the stinker of the week is After, which I believe I reviewed just a couple weeks ago for theatrical. It's not that good of a movie, and it kind of is dumb at the end. And that's it, people. Next time we talk, it is going to be officially October and officially horror movie season. And we're going to be talking about Annabelle, Gone Girl, and Left Behind. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.